Who would kill this pregnant teenager who was found slain in the Georgia woods and why? We will dive into the story of Mia Campos and try to figure out what goes through the mind of a person to whom she loved and cared for. Mia Campos was only 16 years old. She had her whole life ahead of her, and not to mention her unborn son didn't even get the opportunity to begin his life. Since all of this has happened so suddenly and so shockingly for this family, they have really been thrown into a world that they thought they would never have to navigate. Mia Campos was born the youngest of five siblings, in 2008, to her parents Edward and Miriam. They have been incredibly strong during all of this. They live in Loganville, Georgia, about 45 minutes east of Atlanta. Mia's dad, Edward, was actually at one point a DJ, and while Mia was growing up, she took a similar liking to music. In fact, as a young teenager, she already started playing music at birthday parties and other events. This made her father so proud to see her to start walking in his footsteps. She was just a happy person all the time, and that is how they're always going to remember her.
She was a happy girl. She was always happy, always dancing. She loved music. She loved dance. She was everything. Happy all the time.
According to her mom, Mia was not someone who made enemies. In fact, it seems like it was quite the opposite. She was someone who just had a genuinely good heart and a contagious smile, and it made her just an easy person to be around. She was even said to be popular among customers at Dunkin' Donuts, which is where she worked. The most important thing about Mia that you need to know, and it was the most relevant thing going on in her life at the time, is the fact that in July of 2024, she was 7½ months pregnant. She was getting ready to welcome her son into the world, and she had already picked out a name for him, Sebastian. She and Sebastian should be here today. When Mia actually became pregnant, she was 15 years old, which is obviously very young. Mia's family at first was shocked and they were scared, and every family handles and reacts to a teen pregnancy so differently, but one thing about this family is that they made the decision to support Mia and love this new member of their family, no matter what the circumstances were around her pregnancy were. When they first found out, they all got on board and gave her nothing but love and support throughout her pregnancy, even when Mia's brother, Alexis, who was very close with Mia, when he found out, he said he felt angry, upset, and even disappointed, which are all valid feelings to have. As time went on, they got more comfortable with the idea and realized that this was a blessing for them in a lot of ways. They just wanted to do everything they could to help her through this time and help her to navigate motherhood at such a young age. The campus family is incredibly loving, incredibly close, and strong, and they would do literally anything for Mia, and if that meant getting on board and just supporting Mia. At the end of the day, no matter what, they were prepared to do that.
Well, we found out when she was pregnant, my wife, she was the one, she got pregnant, you know. First, you know, we was kind of upset because, you know, 15 years old, you know, it's like, it's normal. It's not normal for kids, you know, to get pregnant at that age. But I was angry. I was upset. But 2 months later, when I see the belly, you know, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, I just fell in love with my grandson, you know, and I told her, I mean, you know what, Mija, you got our support, like a parent, you got 100% support, you know, from your mom and myself. And it's like, don't worry about it. I say, you don't need anything, nobody, you know, you don't need anything else from nobody. I said, you'll be good. Everything is good. Everything's going to be fine.
I was angry. I was really upset. I was really disappointed. I was mad. I wanted to find out where he lived and, you know, do whatever a big brother has to do when they're mad. But I thought about Mia and I thought, I can't do that to her. I didn't want her to think that she made a big mistake.
This really shows their love for Mia. There are so many teenagers out there who wouldn't get that same support from their family, and it's just amazing to see that even though this was a challenging time, they were up for the challenge. It was grateful that Mia had their support for many reasons, but especially because there was one person who didn't seem to want to support her, and that's the baby's father, Jesus Monroy. Jesus and Mia were first introduced by Mia's brother, Alexis. Jesus was 19 years old, so Alexis wasn't even thinking anything would happen because he was so much older than his sister. Jesus wasn't a central person in their lives, that it came as such a shock when they found out that he had gotten Mia pregnant. Nobody in the Campo family even knew that Mia and Jesus had been seeing one another until she announced her pregnancy.
The way I see the story, they didn't have a good relationship in the beginning.
it sounds like it was like maybe one time night that, you know, they had whatever they had to do, and that's how he came up pregnant. But really, they didn't have a good relationship because they never be around together. I mean, he came to the house to pick her up to go to the doctor's appointment because she was pregnant, and drop her up, and it's about it.
I didn't think much of it, you know, because I knew he was older, so he wouldn't try anything. And then I didn't really know much about them up until when I found out that she was pregnant by him up in, I think it was February or January.
According to Mia's family, Jesus did not want to take responsibility for his son, as you just heard. Edward said he would come around here and there and take her to a few doctor's appointments, but there didn't seem to be much interest or really excitement beyond that, which for many families would rightfully make them very angry and disappointed, all of those things. For the most part, it doesn't seem like that was necessarily the case. They made it super clear to him that he was not being forced to stay in the baby's life, or even Mia's life, and that they truly didn't need him. Mia herself, of course, wanted him to be in the picture, and wanted his help and support with their son, and she wanted her son to have his father in his life. Edward actually gave Jesus the opportunity to just completely walk away. He actually told him that he needed to either man up and be a father and be in the baby's life, or he needed to leave, because quite frankly, like, they did not need him, and for as much as Edward wanted Jesus to walk away, he also respected what Mia wanted, which was for him to be part of their lives.
And I was like, you know what, and that's what I told Jesus in front of his mom and his dad. I said, you know what, I said, either you be a real man or you walk away. I said, but I prefer if you walk away. But like I said, Mia, her wisdom was for him to be part of baby's father. The way he made me feel, he was more interested in economy, money-wise. You know, I guess he was not ready. But it's like I was telling the other day, you know, when I met him the second time, I say, if you think you're not going to be a good father, just walk away. And I handle my daughter and my grandchild. Because we don't need you.
All of that really just tells you so much about this family. That they were willing to just let him off the hook, walk away completely, and take the responsibilities on for him, and for Mia's sake and for Sebastian's sake, which is why what ends up happening is just so beyond frustrating. On July 14th, 2024, Mia was 7 1/2 months pregnant, and she and her family were preparing for the final stretch of her pregnancy. In fact, that day she and her mom had gone shopping for things for her baby shower, and it could not have been a more normal morning and afternoon. Even that night seemed to be very typical for them. They were spending the evening together just hanging out as a family, and there were truly no warning signs that Mia's life was in danger. Before 10:30 p.m., Mia let her brother know that she was headed out for a few minutes to meet Jesus, and that the two of them were going to run to a nearby Quick Trip gas station and grab some snacks. This was actually a pretty common thing for them to do, and therefore, when she told her brother she was going to do this, Alexis didn't really think anything about it. Edward and Miriam were actually unaware that she was leaving, and at 10:31 p.m. the family's Ring doorbell camera captured Mia walking out of the door for the very last time. It didn't take long for everyone to realize that something was wrong. When Mia didn't come back home after 30 to 45 minutes for a little excursion that should only have taken like 10 to 15 minutes, everyone in the house grew extremely worried. This shows how concerned and aware they are of each other. For them to notice such a small time discrepancy and already start raising the alarm so quickly. One by one, they began calling her. And when that was unsuccessful, they decided to call Jesus. When they did call him, he did answer. But he said that he hadn't seen or even talked to Mia since the day before, which of course didn't make any sense, because Mia had told her brother that she was going to be with Jesus. The fact that he was saying he hadn't seen her and that they weren't together was alarming to them right away. We know now that investigators believe he was lying, but at the time her family was super concerned and confused as to where Mia was and who she was with. Edward actually asked Jesus to come over, and he did. He also brought his father along with him. It wasn't long until they had a pretty solid lead. It turns out that Mia had her location enabled on the Life 360 app, and using that, her parents were able to gather some critical information. First of all, they realized that Mia's movements had stopped at 10:58 p.m., which was only 27 minutes after she left the house. They all also realized that she was only about a half a mile away. They immediately get into their car and they go to the location that the app says that she's at, and when they get there, they realize that her location isn't on the roadway, but But the app is actually showing that her location is deeper into the tree line. Edward and Jesus began walking up through the dirt and debris, and that's when they found her. Well, actually, that's when Jesus found her. Mia was found 20 to 30 feet from the roadway face down and not breathing. Her nose was slightly bleeding, but there were no major signs of trauma. Immediately, Edward starts trying to do CPR, and unfortunately, it was clear very quickly to him that he was too late to save her, and to save her baby boy.
When did you start to realize that something was off, when Mia wasn't coming home?
It was probably around, let's say, 10:45, by 11:15. That's when we started worrying, like, well, I mean, to go to the country and come back, you're looking maybe not in even 30 minutes. You know, that's when we start calling, because I called Mia and she didn't answer. Her mom called Mia, she didn't answer. My son called Mia, she didn't answer. And then we had to call another friend. She was real close with him, and he called her, and still she didn't answer.
That's when we called Jesus. She was with him. She said no. Okay, I was at the house. I haven't talked to her. I haven't seen her since Saturday morning, which was another lie. And then he came with his father and said, like, well, Mia, she's not with you, so where is she? I said, well, I don't know. I haven't talked to her. And that's when Asha came and showed me the app on her phone. And it's like, well, he's right here around the corner. So everybody jumped in the car and we went out there and looking for her. He was the one that he found her first. But because when we turned to the right side, because the app, he knew I was getting real close to her. And he just jumped real fast. He just jumped and he said, well, I already found her. She's right here. She's right here. And then that's when I told my daughter, it's like, what's wrong with you? What's wrong? I said, wake up. And I started doing, you know, CPR, and I couldn't get a response. And then I put my fingers on her neck. That was no pulse. And it's like, no, I said, wake up, please wake up. And by the time I grabbed her hands, she was already cold.
Mia was found at 12:50 a.m. And by 1 a.m., emergency services had arrived on the scene. Officers were told by Mia's family that she had left the night before with an unknown person, because by this point, they had been told by Jesus that she wasn't with him, which is why in the early reporting on this case, you'll actually see it mentioned that Mia was lured out of her home by an unknown person. Investigators didn't take long to connect the dots right back to Jesus. In those early morning hours of July 15th, the Campos family says that Jesus was not acting the way that they would expect someone to act after having just found the mother of their unborn child, and their child dead. At one point it said that he had just fallen asleep in his car, and then at other times he was very quiet, and seemed to be completely unemotional.
Was he showing any emotion? Did he seem to react in a normal way?
No. It was like cold-blooded. He was like, oh well. You know, because if that was the father of he was the baby of the father, or I'm the father of the baby, I'm gonna react differently. I'm gonna react crazy. I'm gonna cry. I'm gonna like, what happened to my baby? Nothing, because he knew. He knew what he did.
If that was not strange to you, listen to this. Alexis says that he was sitting next to Jesus on the side of the road while police were arriving on scene, and allegedly Jesus leaned over to him and asked him not to tell the police that he was the father of the unborn child.
Later, once the police arrived to the scene with the medical examiners and everybody else, I sat next to him because he was on the sidewalk away from mostly everything. And the first thing he told me was, do me a favor, don't tell them that I'm the one that got Mia pregnant, that I'm the father of the son. And the first thing I told him was, that's not important right now. This is more important. And I told him he's really ignorant for thinking that instead of being more worried about Mia and his son. I carry a lot of guilt because I was the last one who saw her. And if I knew, I would have, could have, and I should have stopped her from leaving. But since it was such a normal thing, I didn't think much. And I carry most of the guilt because if I knew, then she would still be here.
He wasn't just acting strange to the Campos family. Reporting on this case states that he was also being evasive and straight up lying to the police as well. According to an article from Court TV, police described their first encounter with Jesus as hesitant to tell the officer who he was and how he knew Mia. This isn't surprising considering what he allegedly said to Alexis, but apparently to the police he just said that he was a close friend of the family and did not share that he was the baby's father. Marisol, Mia's sister, was actually standing next to him during this interaction, and she decided to speak up because she knew that he, of course, wasn't giving the full truth. In Spanish, she told him that he needed to, quote, tell the truth and not to lie, but after that, he decided he was done speaking. He didn't stay silent. Days later on July 17th, when he was brought in for a follow-up interview, and because he continued to lie to investigators, he was arrested for making false statements. By this point, an autopsy had been completed and a medical examiner ruled that Mia's death was the result of a homicide, and that her exact cause of death was asphyxiation. At first in reporting, there was no mention of Jesus being considered a suspect in Mia's murder, but then on July 23, 2024, he was charged with malice murder, felony murder, feticide, and aggravated assault in the killing of Mia Campos and her unborn baby. According to Edward, despite the fact that Jesus lived approximately 20 minutes away from their house, he seemed to arrive much quicker to their house when Mia was missing. Obviously, that felt strange to him, because if he were truly at home like he said, it would have taken him longer to get there, not to mention he felt like it was pretty strange that his father also came with him, because at that point she was just missing and they weren't sure if anything had happened, so he just felt weird about it. Of course, he wonders if it's possible that Jesus had shared something with his father about what had happened, and again, this is just what Edward thinks. There is no statement from the authorities about this.
And the father didn't call Jesus until sometime closer to midnight to say, hey, you know, she hasn't come home, she's not responding, and he came right over with his father, which Mia's father thought was a bit of a red flag. Why are you here with your dad? You know, you don't know that anything's wrong, but he feels that perhaps Jesus had shared with the father some information and the father may have known more than what they knew at the time.
And where does he live? Does he live in the same town?
In the same general area, but the family told me that he lived about 20 minutes away. That was another sort of red flag for Mia's father when he called Jesus and said, you know, we haven't seen her. We need you to come help us find her. He showed up pretty quickly. And the father thought that was odd.
Meaning that he wasn't home.
Right. Like he had said, he said, I was at home. I wasn't with her. And the father's like, well, you got here awfully quick with your dad. So, you know.
And he has his own car, we believe.
Yes.
Okay.
Another thing that he thought was weird was Jesus was very quick to touch Mia's body when she was found. According to Edward, Jesus sort of like jumped on top of her and started touching her body when he first found her. And think about it, if they hadn't been together that day like Jesus was claiming, there would be no reason for his fingerprints to be on her. Edward wonders if maybe he was trying to establish some sort of reason for his DNA to be on his daughter's body, and obviously that's just speculation. Who knows if he even had thought that far out, or if he was just trying to cause more of an emotional scene, and make it seem like he was more upset. Their family feels like that was a giant red flag. And another obvious red flag is the fact that his story didn't align with what Mia said she was doing that night, unless she lied to her brother about who she was meeting up with. Jesus was the person that she went to see that night, and I'm sure most of you are thinking there's a pretty easy way to figure that out, and that's by looking at their cell phones. You know, if Jesus was with her that night, his location data is going to say that. In a preliminary hearing, they confirmed that Jesus's phone was in the same area at the same time as when they believed Mia was killed. They also confirmed that Jesus and Mia had spoken that night after 8 p.m., even though Jesus said they hadn't. Before, when Jesus was arrested for making false statements, well, we learned in more detail during this hearing that this was why in that follow-up interview that Jesus said that he hadn't seen Mia on the 14th, and that they hadn't spoken since 8 p.m. that night, which is 2.5 hours before she disappeared. New information says that wasn't true. It turns out that when investigators were beginning to look through Mia's phone, they noticed that she had taken and saved a screen recording. And in this video, they could see that she recorded the messages between herself and Jesus, where he is asking her to meet up. Investigators also saw that he was asking her not to tell people that she was meeting up with him and to delete their messages. He even told her to delete the messages from her recently deleted folder as well. And this screen recording was saved to her phone only minutes before she got into his car. Unfortunately, they got the feeling that she knew something was seriously wrong. Because one, why else would she have taken that screen recording? And two, after that, at 10:37 p.m., she texted a friend saying that she was scared, and then she stopped replying altogether. Ultimately, all these messages are what led investigators to charge him with making false statements. He clearly had spoken to her after 8 p.m. These texts obviously allude to so much more, but at the time it was enough to arrest him for making false statements before officially charging him with murder. We also learned that Jesus's attorney said that besides the phone data and testimony from the family, there was little evidence to actually prove that Jesus was with Mia that night. Although cell phone data placing him in the area that she died that night is pretty incriminating, plus Jesus admitted that he had his phone with him the entire night when he was questioned on the 17th. So it's not like he could claim someone else had it, but in the end of this hearing, the judge ruled that there was enough evidence based on the GPS coordinates and meetup to move forward with the trial, which is great news. When it comes to his arrest, the Campos family says they are very appreciative of law enforcement's swift action. The Campos family found it comforting to know that Mia's case is being given the time and attention that it deserves. At this point in time, there are still, of course, quite a few things that we don't know. One of those things being motive, and also where exactly she was killed. Based on the time that Mia left her house and when her phone stopped moving, there is a 27-minute window for when this crime took place. But as far as anything more specific than that, it just hasn't been officially released. On August 18, 2024, a hearing after his initial arraignment, he was back in court and bond was set for him at $56,000. This low bond made the Campos family upset. His conditions was that he would have to wear ankle monitoring system and be under house arrest. He had to turn in his passport as well. His trial date is pushed out and set for early next summer in 2025. Please join us again next time for another true crime episode. Until then, please be safe and watch out for others as well as yourself.